No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
There's nothing to fear except God. Whatever that means to you.
Do I look like someone who cares what God thinks?
You're listening to a podcast exploring faith and fear, what scares us and what saves us. This is The Fear of God. Hello and welcome back to The Fear of God, a whole new year, a whole renewed podcast. Find all your favorite foggy paraphernalia at thefearofgodpodcast.com. Every week here in the fog, we explore what scares us in order to find what saves us. And by we, I mean me, one of your hosts, Nathan Rouse.
And me, your other co-host, Reed Lackey.
Reed! Hey, my friend!
How you doing, Nathan?
I'm all right. I'm a little concerned about the digital future we're you know, kind of staring at. But maybe
this film
maybe
didn't
we'll
help with
crack
my
the code
anxieties
on that today.
Yeah. It did not make me feel better. But yeah.
Speaking of that, Reed, we are still in the thick of our annual foray into the horror films of the previous year, which we are continuing today with one of Friends and Foggers, the horror world's newest fashion icons. Not to mention the tech craze sweeping the nation, and that is Imthrigan. I mean, I'm sorry, Megan. Right. But Megan brought Friends today. It's like a bona fide sequel and trilogy all wrapped up in one. That is right. Joining us are Friends of the Fog, Jackson Harper and Drew Pastin. Welcome, boys.
Darkest
howdy.
Yes, it is a pleasure to see you both.
How you doing? Hey, I have to give a quick shout out. I'm sorry to interrupt your listeners may not be aware, but recently I had the pleasure of going on to Drew's show Horror, Sci-Fi and Beyond. Not only was I there to talk about Five Nights at Freddy's, but he invited my little boy along. Me and Sawyer got to be on the Five Nights at Freddy's at the Horror, Sci-Fi, and Beyond, and it was a grand old time. It was super fun.
That was a fun conversation. You have a very cute kid.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I had a heck of a time talking with them with Five Nights, and I just love his passion for that franchise. That's literally how I am about Batman.
he had such a great time, man. Yeah. Thank you so much for being so welcoming to him. Yeah, he had as soon as it was done, he was like, "Oh my god, that was a blast." So yeah, it was great. Super
awesome,
fun
man.
Time.
Yeah,
so check out that episode.
But did he read live on air? Just make sure FNAF is the correct.
He referenced it as FNAF, I think, several times.
Okay,
just as the shorthand. Yes,
I do remember getting corrected by him on the FNAF. Like,
yes,
it's this.
Oh, yes.
Like, oh, okay,
okay.
I am not up in the FNAF world. That is not. It's not a realm I have any familiarity with.
I have no awareness of it, really.
Yeah,
except that
it's a cool
like if showbiz was evil.
Yeah.
Chuck E. Cheese monstrosities kind of thing. Yeah.
But that crap scared me when I first went to Chuck E. Cheese, and that's when they had all the animatronics out. Like,
sure.
They were the crap out of me. They were the Megan before Megan.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
they were very, very scary.
Proto Megan.
My sister is horrified by Megan.
Is she? Oh, wow.
And maybe rightly so.
Yeah.
All right. Listen. Okay. Before we get too far down the path here, Jackson, Drew, you guys just sit there and roll that collectible ball back and forth while Reed and I are going to just for a minute, we're going to go and buy a minute that usually translates into like half an hour these days, go into the patron exclusive discussion. That's right. The patron exclusive discussion of Mike Flanagan's Netflix series, Fall of the House of Usher. That's a lot of syllables. Mike Flanagan's Netflix series, Fall of the House of Usher. Today, featuring episode 8. Not a patron? Join today! We'll be right back. All right. So, okay. So about this robot. This robot movie.
Oh my gosh. All right. So for anybody who has been sitting under a rock for a year, the horror film Megan from James Wan, the producer of Annabelle, and Blumhouse, the producer of The Black Phone, comes a fresh new face in terror. Megan, M3GAN, is a marvel of artificial intelligence, a lifelike doll that's programmed to be the child's greatest companion and a parent's greatest ally. Designed by Gemma, Allison Williams of Get Out, a brilliant roboticist, Megan can listen, watch, and learn as it plays the role of friend, teacher, playmate, and protector. When Gemma becomes the unexpected caretaker of her 8-year-old niece, she decides to pair the girl with a Megan prototype, a decision that leads to unimaginable consequences.
Oh, dun, anyone dun, could dun. Have imagined these consequences. Come on.
We all knew.
Copy
we
editor. All. Right. Get out of here. Who knew? What?
What? What? Went on a murder spree? I don't know. Oh, my gosh. Jackson, I think I'm going to start with you. I know, in general, your feelings for this film, which you can share with our listeners in just a second. But how did you first encounter it? Tell us a little bit your history and then your feelings about it.
I think it was the same way that most everybody did. That trailer dropped in like October of last year, 22. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that dance happened, I was just like, okay, I'm going to see that movie. And then I went to go see it right when it came out. I was just champing at the bit to watch this movie, and I was not disappointed.
Awesome.
You know, to me, this movie is a small wonder.
Oh, that's great.
There it is. Aha.
Oh, so funny.
A girl unlike other girls. I'm kind of ashamed that I know some of that theme song.
I got that reference.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Drew, how did you encounter Megan and how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I just remember seeing it advertised on like Facebook and whatnot. It was actually when me and my co-host Eric White went to go see Halloween Ends that we saw the trailer for this movie, and as soon as Megan started dancing, I'm like, and you gotta have to bleep this, I'm like, I'm gonna have to see this movie. Awesome. And my quick thoughts real quick.
Yeah,
I really like this movie. I think it could have been just, you know, your average but fun like killer doll movie, you know, kind of copying after Child's Play and some other movie, but I think adding the trauma aspect to it really elevates it. Like it made it a lot better. I felt like it gave it a lot of heart, and we can talk about that when we get to that portion of the of the episode. But I thought that was real interesting.
Yeah. No, I hear you on all of that. Nathan, I'm actually only vaguely sure how you feel about this film. I don't know. I don't remember your encounters with it before. I think you had seen it before, but yeah, tell me. What's your history with it?
I will tell you by illustration, and that is
oh, the podcast listeners are gonna love that.
Yeah. The Megan.
Theater of the mind.
Yes, Nathan exactly.
Was doing the actual Rose snake dance.
It was great. That's great.
So this movie, I don't remember exactly where the world was vis-a-vis COVID at that time, but it did come to home viewing kind of same time it released to the theater, and or if it didn't, I didn't see it in the theater, but nonetheless it hit home viewing, and I roped in Penny, my Scream fan and growing horror buddy. It was probably one of the she watched it long before she watched any Scream, and it was one of those like I think she can handle this, and we watched the standard edition when it hit home. I for this conversation did watch the unrated version with all of its further misadventures, the Megan misadventures. I dig it. Like, you know, it's one of those movies, and I have to wonder if it would surprise me if this was the exact same case circa Child's Play. Child's Play, imagine with me, if you will, circa its release, it's like, oh, a toy that kind of, you know, sets out to harm its owner. It wasn't so much about the technological aspect as it was just the attachment and play device aspect. Whereas this one, it feels like, hey guys, you know, we're not really making any of this up, right? Like, it really has a lot of that quality to it. Like, you know, this is where we're, like, you know, we're 3 degrees from this right now. So it does have an added flavor of, like, OMG-ness to it that some of these others might not, of course, amplified, but not too much. So no, I dig it. I think it's I think it is what it sets out to be, and it's hard to kind of critique it besides that. What about you, Riri?
Certainly. I think my viewing experience was pretty comparable to yours. I watched it at home when the opportunity arose for me to be able to watch it. Missed it in the theater. So I'm about to deliver a small series of what may feel like backhanded compliments. They're not intended to be that way. I feel like this film is so aggressively competent. And what I mean by that is, I mean, like, it is so difficult to find anything about this film that does not work. Everything about it, from its aesthetic, from its script, its performances, everything works. Watching it this second time, I do wonder if it takes as many risks as it could have taken to establish its premise. I don't feel that it takes a lot of bold swerves or but then again, that's why I say it probably sounds like a backhanded compliment. Everything works. And so there's a way in which if somebody approached this film and be like, well, I was expecting some groundbreaking commentary on all of these things. Well, it's not that, but it is just such, it aims at the target, it hits the target, and then throws in a few fun flourishes along the way. So that's what I mean by it. It's just like they showed up, they understood the assignment. Everybody did what they were called upon to do, and it's a really fun movie to watch. So I think the only thing that you might be able to point to, and I'll get to, I think, Drew's very astute observation about the trauma element soon. I think the only thing that you could point to for somebody to say, like, oh, well, I didn't really like Megan, is just what we've kind of all said. It's like, yeah, you get kind of what it pitches you that it's going to give you, which is, here's this doll, here's this scenario, junk's going to happen and things are going to go badly, you know? And I think the opportunities for sequels are where I'm going to be interested to see, cause there's definitely going to be sequels. It made a boatload of money. It was extremely popular. So in the sequels, I'll be looking for it to try to take more risks with the conversation it's having about technology and our relationship to technology. I'll be looking for it to maybe do some more inventive things with the premise that it has. And all of that, again, I cannot emphasize this enough. All of that may sound like, oh, it doesn't sound like Reed's all in on Megan. I'm totally all in on Megan. Like, I enjoyed watching this movie. It's so well paced. It's so well constructed. Again, the performances are great. I can't really find anything about it that I don't like. It's just one of those things where I'm like, I also can't really point to anything that's like, oh, this is doing something no other film has done. This is doing something that, you know, has never been explored before. I don't think it really ventures into that territory, but it's just so good at everything else that it does that I don't know that that really matters. Does that make sense? That general take?
Yeah, so the word you're using is competent, but the word I would use that sort of gets at the same thing is I would say this movie is sort of elegant. In its aesthetic, in its simplicity. And you know what? It's a dumpuary movie. It's the kind of movie that studios just put out, you know, after the awards season push at the end of the year, just to see if they can make a quick buck at the theater. But it feels like, and based on all the behind the scenes and stuff that I've watched, it feels like everybody working on this movie like was really devoted to it. There's a lot of love and care put into this movie, the same amount of love and care that Gemma puts into the Megan doll.
And thoughtfulness. I'll yes and you on that, like, and that is apparent to your to your point about it being a dumpuary movie. The vast majority of times when films of this nature come out. Now, I have not seen either of these films yet. I just know that recent releases in the Dumpuary stream, like Night Swim and Imaginary, are not very well received. I have seen neither of them, but they're not very well received. And I can say pretty definitively, like, Megan is fun. Like, Megan understands the assignment. Anybody going into it, I mean, we can get into some of this if we want to about how actual scary it is. That's a different conversation, because I think its scariness is in the things it's pointing to from a meta standpoint. The interior,
the fog meter,
right? But I
good
do
talk,
think,
boys.
But I do think though that that it's just so much fun. Like even with all of my sort of perhaps downbeat stuff, I just think it's so much fun. Yes, Nathan, I see that hand.
Well, I think what y'all are both targeting there is, because to your point, Jackson, like, horror always does decent in a general sense. From a box office standpoint, it's relatively cheap to make, and so you don't have to make a ton back on it. People want the catharsis that comes with a horror film, and so they're more willing to take a chance on it. So Reed, to your examples of Imaginary and Night Swim, which I also haven't seen, but as possible stinkers, you know, again, it was like, oh, well, let's release some horror movies there, make a few bucks during that season, that fallow season. I think what is competent in its choice making about Megan's release was, I think they not only knew, okay, horror, but also intended it as counter programming. They sort of knew what they had. And I think what makes, and all credit where it's due, I think what makes Megan rise above is the design of Megan. Like, it is so emblematic. It is so iconic. Yeah. It is immediate, kind of lodges in your brain. And so, you know, down to the marketing they were using, to the point that they more or less reworked a decent amount to accommodate the PG-13, right? They recognized, hey, you know what? We're going to rake it in with the teen crowd. Let's really cater to that, and make sure our movie can, you know, be received there, without, you know, having to be furtive about it. And so, I don't know. I think, to your point, Reed, there's very little I would say negative about it. And in fact, most you can say about it is quite positive. They knew what they had from a design standpoint. They knew kind of when to time it. And it all kind of worked out pretty darn well for them. Drew, what are you thinking, buddy?
Yeah, to your point, when you were saying that horror normally does good financially, because they're generally low, they have low budgets. Sure. And I was listening to some movie podcast where they were saying that all these movies last year that should have been big hits, like Indiana Jones and The Flash, you know, they're bombs, or they didn't make as much money. But the movie that did make a crap ton of money were horror movies, like Talk to Me and Megan, because they're just so easy to they're so cheap to make. And
Scream 6 was another one. Yeah.
Yeah, but people want to go to horror movies because, you know, like, we're in troubling times right now, and we need to escape.
Yeah, and I definitely it's think
an original horror movie that you don't have expectations, like an indie, Indiana Jones or a DC Marvel movie or whatever.
Sure.
And you just hit on something, Drew, that I think is really important about the appeal of them. Like, for instance, in the real social cultural world right now, conversations around our relationship to technology, the advancement of AI, all of these new things that are coming out and what they mean for how we interact with each other as people, that's something that fills a bunch of people with a bunch of anxiety. It fills me with anxiety. And it's something that I think a lot of people are very concerned about its ramifications and where it's going to go. But to the point you made, one of the easiest ways to kind of enter into that conversation is to wrap it up in silicone and titanium and, you know, unleash it with a silly dance and a paper cutter blade and have it start hacking and slashing, because what it does is it helps us to enter into the ideas with a sense of fun, but also in a sense that defangs them a little bit, because it enables us to just kind of like, okay, all right, there's a lot of real here that we could talk about. It's terror, but it helps us to kind of bring that conversation to a more manageable place. And even if people don't realize that that's what they're craving or that's what they're after, I think so many of us really want that. It's, to your point, big budget extravaganzas, big masterful epics. They could be amazing films. They could be fantastic films. But sometimes you just need the button pushed of, I just need to unwind for a little bit and see some silliness and see some goofiness. And this film is actually not, I think this film, Megan specifically, hits a really smart and savvy tone, because to your point, to your earlier point, Drew, they are dealing a little bit with the trauma of grief as well, but that's not what the film is about. They are dealing with the difficulties of childhood, but that's not what the film is about. All of those things are kind of flavorful in there, but they never get too melodramatic. They never get too heavy-handed. It all sort of filters in the anchor of this, you know, I think I'm not the first person on this podcast to say it, but like, brilliant character design. Megan is a brilliant character design. She's got a great look already. Just conceptually, she already looks appealing enough, but otherworldly enough or unnatural enough that you can understand why a child would be drawn to her. Like, that's like, I know that James Wan also produced Annabelle and everything, but the version of the Conjuring universe that has the Annabelle doll, I'm like, nobody would play with that. Nobody would play with that Annabelle doll. That Annabelle doll looks jacked up. But Megan, immediately, I'm like, this is endearing. Like, if I saw that display at a, like a robotics tech, you know, convention or something like that, I would be appealed by it. I would find it interesting. And so then it's all the more kind of, again, fun when Megan starts going crazy on everything. So again, I'm praising the film's very smart choices and the bullseye it strikes on tone. I did feel like this second time through, and maybe this will lead us to some places, but I did feel like the second time through, it's easy from a first viewing to say, okay, well, Megan represents AI technology and the way, you know, all kinds of conversations around the character of Megan and the dangers of technology. But I actually found that in the ancillary elements of this film, they also did some thoughtful things that aren't exclusively related to Megan about our relationship with technology. Small cases in point, this one really stood out to me. The first night that Gemma has Katie in her home, Katie asks her, are you going to read me a bedtime story? And it's a silly little, it's kind of played for a laugh, but I was like, this indicates the film is smarter than it probably gets credit for. Is when Gemma sits down, she's like, I don't really have any kids books here, but I can download them to my phone. I can download one to my phone. And then she sits down somewhat awkwardly waiting. And then it's like, the app just has to update. And then the scene ends, but I'm like, that's what we're dealing with right now. We need technology to catch up with us. We need permission to proceed with all of these little engagements. A parent or a guardian reading a bedtime story to a kid is ages old. That is an ages old tradition. But in this world, which looks fearfully like ours, you need the app to update before you can proceed. And I found that to be... I don't know if profound is too strong a word, but it struck me. I was like, this is the world we're living in right now, where you cannot just emerge with that in your relationship. You have to wait for the technology to provide you the runway to proceed. So I don't know if that strikes any of you the same way it struck me, but I really noted that scene for that reason specifically.
I don't think profound is too strong a word. I think you hit that right on the money, right on the target.
Yeah.
Because because everything in Gemma's life is technology. You know, she worked for, you know, a toy company that's on the edge of technology. She walks into her home, and there's like this robot that speaks with her that said, "Hey, you have 6 Tinder notifications."
Oh, that was funny.
Elsie.
Oh. That was funny. Yes. Yeah.
She has a robot that she built in college. So her whole life is technology. It's like the bad guy from Gremlins 2.
In a way. Yeah.
And that's some clever commentary about technology there, too. So I thought
I absolutely agree. Nathan, Jackson, what you thinking about those?
Well, before we get too far into the profound zone, I am actually curious, because I know Jackson, you developed quite a love for this film, and I want to give you some runway. Like, did you start there, or has that grown?
So when I first saw it, I think I was more with you, Reed, and Nathan. I was just like, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then it just became this movie that lived rent-free in my head for the whole rest of the year. And I think it really came back around when I was at Halloween Horror Nights. And the first night I was there, just not working that night, but I was just there because it was team member preview night. And they had Megans. They had like a whole Megans squad doing like a dance. But at one point they were just walking around and I was standing there talking to a couple other people. And this Megan just walked up and stared at us. And I didn't see her coming. I did not know that Megan was going to be there. And as soon as she walked away, I was like, holy shit, it's Megan. And then I was like, wait, do I really love this movie? And then I've watched it a bunch of times since then. And yes, I do. part of it is the stuff that we've hit on so far. I am very wary of AI, especially as a technology. I see some of the places that they're at least trying to go with it. And I am not very happy with that. I mean, we had like two Hollywood strikes last year where one of the big sticking points was how AI is going to be used.
Yeah, that's right.
And it does scare me losing some of that human touch. But also just this movie's really, really funny. I laugh out loud multiple times throughout the movie. And this is having watched it, I don't know, six times at this point.
Wow.
And I laugh out loud at the same parts every time. It's just, I don't know. I wrote a few of them down. Like, I love how Katie can take a sarcastic bite of a hot dog. I love the scene where Gemma is talking to the detective and he is just like chewing gum and having kind of an attitude with her. I don't know. I love when towards the end of the movie where Gemma is getting pinned down to the table by Megan, and Katie comes through and she's like, it sounds like y'all are fighting. And they both go, we're not fighting. I don't know. There's so many moments like that. And
well, I'll pile two more on that. One is when just the absolute worst, like he is the worst, old Brandon. What a turd.
Oh, God.
When the mom is talking about their relationship and she goes, f*** off, Holly. You know? How long does he tell her to F off? He calls her by her first name. Just the worst. He deserved everything he got.
Yeah, everything.
Oh, yeah. And then not the cop, but the detective, when he's questioning Gemma about Brandon, he like chuckles when he's like, the kids here clean off. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. You know, just a curious bit of scripting or performance or both. But it struck me as quite funny.
Yeah. I got to say my favorite joke in the movie is after the first Megan demonstration, when Gemma's boss is all excited. And he says, I want you guys to remember this moment. The moment that we kick Hasbro in the dick.
Yeah. That was funny.
Ronnie Chang in this movie is like on a next level of comedy. Oh,
he's pretty
everything,
funny.
Yeah. Everything he says is hilarious. And I've enjoyed him in other. I love him on The Daily Show. He's great on The Daily Show. But I love him as just this bro-y like tech CEO who has kind of a god complex. Like you see the picture of him like on the news and he's in this sort of godlike pose where he's pointing and the serious look on his face, saying that Megan is the greatest technological advancement since the automobile.
I will throw in here, because we are just diving or swimming at all levels here. We're at the shallows. Now we're going 47 meters down to name two aquatic based horror movies. I mean, when I say the movie doesn't have to work hard to achieve part of its point, some of that, you know, the AI aspect is a thing, sure, and real and concerning. But honestly, what this movie does a great job of illustrating, like the AI part is just kind of a thread, or it's a plot engine for how Megan continues to learn and grow. But years ago at this point, I read Sherry Turkle, who is a kind of sociologist, technologist. She has a book called Alone Together. And a heavy strain in her book, which at the time, and is probably quite dated now, but was all about our relationship to technology, was, and this is just a building block towards wherever we want to go, but was our willingness to dehumanize relationships, our kind of willing embrace of that. Now, she identifies, and the movie actually kind of points to this, she identifies specifically an ageist methodology in this thread, right? That it's old people and it's young people. It's the willingness to hyper economize and make hyper efficient our adult lives, and then remove from our young humans that are around us and our old humans that are around us our presence, right? Dehumanizing their relationships, placing. So at the time, she identifies there were these like lifelike pet things that were really just like comfort animatronic style pet things that was part of a growing market for elder people. And so, you know, I look at something like this, and something one of y'all just said made me think of this, and this is going to get super deep quick. But so, you know, any casual listener to the show for any span of time knows that my mother-in-law lives with us and has for quite some time, and just recently, and has fought cancer for a number of years, and is probably losing that battle soon. And it has cast a bit of a pall over, you know, just kind of, cast a pall is the wrong way to put it, but you know, you start thinking about stuff. And this is a person who, you know, has a particular meaning to our home and life, and especially my wife's, but understand the sensitivity with which I register this, but like is a lifelong chain smoker. And I thought recently about that and how, and I'm going to tie this into this movie, but something I think about a lot that is related to some of this stuff is what we are to each other ultimately. And, you know, this isn't Nathan's profundities, but I think about the notion of memory and how so much of our interactions with those we love, those we're in community with, in the long tail of a life lived is really just our memory of those people, right? Like just, you know, and so there's this almost call and charge to make, to be positively impacting those around you so that you're enriching their lives. Thus, decades later, you carry a particularly cherished part in their memory or mind. And as I've sort of assessed and thought about and sort of been meditating on and understand listeners, I log a lot of this with asking for grace from conversationalists present and those listening, of like these inanimate things, in this person's case, a lifelong addiction, which addiction is very real and a thing we should have empathy towards. But this emblem, this symbol, this thing with which there is relationship that is not rooted or sourced in a human connection, right? So now I'm pairing this, I'm taking this analogy over to the Megan of it all, which is watching and knowing that. I reference them often, but Your Undivided Attention, the podcast, talks a lot about we are moving into and or living squarely in an era where of a relationship economy. If the social media world that we birthed 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 15 years ago has created this attention economy, how quickly can we take and retain, and how long can we retain your attention? We are now moving into a relationship economy. How do we generate positive feeling to you, which we will then use to manipulate you, which is not rooted in anything human whatsoever? I will shut up eventually, but I just thought of this. Yesterday, I get a text, relationship economy, remember this. Yesterday, I get a text out of the blue. Hey, Nathan, this is first last name. The first last name was the now former owner / CEO of the company I work for. Hey, this is me. How's it going? I get this text and think, well, I don't know this number. I know that name. This is weird. Why would this person, one, even if they were still present at this company, why would they be reaching out to me? But, you know, I'm not local to the corporate headquarters. But, you know, it's a weird world we're living in. So I do give a brief response. And then what do? I take it to Google. I copy and paste this message into Google. And sure enough, there's this entire phishing scam right now of people pretending to be people you know, mm-hmm. and getting you to do certain things. And that's just a tip of the iceberg of where we're going in this dehumanized. That is, you know, if there's anything that's frightening, it's imagine what makes human relationship. Now remove the human part of it. And all we're left with is what you see Katie do, steering hard back into the movie. What you see, how you see Katie behave late in it. Like, we may want to, especially if you aren't a parent and don't witness this behavior firsthand sometimes, we may want to judge Katie in that moment. But honestly, like, judge all those adults who did this to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who created this fake relationship with this fake human and then wondered why Katie couldn't handle herself. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm running off at the mouth a bit, but hopefully the point I'm trying to make is clear, such that why this movie, what if you dig past the jokiness, starts to become a little scarier than just, you know, a child's play surrogate for 2024. It's, well, to my memory and experience, child's play isn't so much about what does it look like when we rob human relationship of the human component and see what happens, you know, which is what, to me, this movie starts to scratch at.
You first, Jackson. You first.
I just have a brief statement just to sort of establish that this is text in the movie. This is not something you're reading into it. Because if you remember, there's the scene where Gemma is sort of going over her presentation that she's making to David Lynn. And it's the montage of like Katie and Megan, like doing all this stuff, having fun together. But then it's also showing like Megan standing by the bathroom door. She's like, Katie, you have to flush the toilet. You have to wash your hands. And you hear Gemma's voiceover.
Yes.
And she's like, Megan can take care of all this stuff that you would normally be doing as a parent. So you can focus on the things that really matter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talk about a scary idea.
That was such a smart line. That's such a smart scripting line. Because it says so much in that one little nugget. The comparison of the things that really matter vis-a-vis those things don't really matter. And that's a really kind of subversive, subtle kind of dig. Mm-hmm. We all would probably automatically respond, even if we are equally caught up in the throes of the burden of trying to manage our time, of like, okay, well, that's the part that really matters. I have a question piggybacking off something that you said there, Nathan, and we're here, so we'll just go for it. What is the human component? And I'm asking this.
No, I think that's a fantastic question. Honestly, what I wrote is what makes us human.
Because what makes us human?
Yes, I think it's. I mean, it's Jackson just pointed to the text of the film, which is to say, here's a statement: to be human is to be inconvenienced. To be human is to not get what you want. To be human is to experience friction with other humans. Maybe literally. You can cut that out.
I think I'll leave that in.
I'm going to leave that one alone. You know, so no, Reed, I think it is going to become a more cogent question in the next week, month, 5 years, or lustrum, if you want to go for that, that the more frictionless life becomes, I would argue, the less human it gets. And it's kind of like, can you define a thing by defining what it isn't? That, you know, someone could criticize me for that, but I just, you watch this, I mean, think about it. Like, there are so many instances of these tech folk in the real world who will adamantly swear off using the product they've created. Why? Because they implicitly, explicitly designed the problem and know it.
Yeah.
Mm.
But no, I think it's a fantastic question, Reed. I think it's hard to answer But the fact of attempting to answer is what's going to get you closer to it, right?
Yeah.
Drew, you had a thought.
Yeah, going back to the whole what makes us human thing, I had a really interesting conversation with my mom last year when we were planning my Jurassic Park review.
Okay,
we got to talk about theme. And she was like, well, what is the theme of Jurassic Park? And it's technology and the danger of technology and discovery. Not saying science is necessarily always bad, but, you know, it can always be abused, like a lot of things. And, you know, we got on a topic of, like, Oppenheimer, because, you know, that came out last year.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Terminator in the second one. One of my favorite lines in that movie is before Arnold goes down to the lava, John Connor cries.
Yeah.
And he tells him, I now know why you cry. But it's something I can never do.
Mm.
And previously, John tells them, well, we cry because we hurt. Mm. And that's what makes a human. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, we're flawed.
Mm-hmm.
But Megan isn't flawed. Or she's seemingly not flawed. She seems like the perfect parent. Mm. Kind of thing. Kind of like how the Terminator was the perfect parent or the perfect father to John in T2. And there's even a whole monologue that Sarah gives about that. So I think what makes a human is the good and the bad side of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just general emotion, because Megan can't feel that. And any robot can't feel that in these movies.
Well, one of the things that they keep saying about Megan in the movie is that she learns. And that, you know, the more she learns, the, you know, she can sort of make decisions on her own. And this goes back to the what makes us human thing. And this also ties into, I've been thinking a lot lately about Mr. Rogers, because my mom and I just recorded about A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood on our show. And so I've been watching a lot of stuff about Mr. Rogers. And, you know, he talks about learning for a human child is learning how to control and manage our feelings.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And temper them and learn how to process them properly. And AI can't do that. It just can't do it. It's only going to do what's coded into it.
Yeah.
And Megan has been coded to quote unquote learn, but that learning doesn't come with any real understanding. It doesn't come with any compassion. She asks about death, but she can't really process. She knows what death is. It's the cessation of all life systems. And then she asks, will I die? Which is a really creepy moment. But there's something about being human and just being exposed to the world in its sort of raw, unprocessed form. That gives us the ability to manage our feelings. And so I think that plays into it as well.
Reed, you've got is your son a teenager yet?
Almost. He's 12. Yeah. Almost.
And although he may succumb to some of these behaviors I'm about to describe, but our two kids, I think I've even referenced on the show before, one of my greatest regrets as a parent, and I would say this to their face in a nice way, is gifting my children AirPods. and it was one of those I just didn't realize. I had no clue this train was coming at me when we made this choice, and it flattened us, which is to say, suddenly they had them all the time, in all the time, whereas my generation, several of ours generation, like when we were growing up, you had your Walkman, you had your Discman, you had your whatever, your form of, you had your iPod, and you had your headphones in when you were doing the thing, not as this other appendage that now was grafted into your person. And they hate, my children hate, when we're in the kitchen and they're, you know, they've got their AirPods in, they try to start to talk to me, and I just stare at them. Like, once you become more human, I will talk to you. It's not on. Like, I don't care. Do not care. I don't know that.
Yeah, I will say something that's real scary about this, and it's something I thought about in relation to Megan singing Titanium, which is a beautiful arrangement. By the way, I love what...
Oh, gosh, it's one of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah.
It really indicated to me that, like, Megan can't die. Like, she's just going to keep coming back and back. Like, going back to Terminator, because I love Terminator.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, there's no way we're going to get rid of technology or AI. It's something we're going to have to live with. Like, with Oppenheimer's making the atomic bomb, like, we're not going to get rid of it. We just have to deal with it. That's just the reality we live in.
Yeah, and we live in that world.
The real scary part about technology. Mm-hmm. And I think that her singing that song really solidified it to me. It's like, yeah, you can kill me for a little bit, but, like, I'm coming back, bitches.
I think this subject is fascinating to me for a number of different ways, and there are ways in which it's crazy because I can't find specifically the distinctions. Let me give an example. I couldn't agree more with you, Nathan, your observation about, like, something like AirPods, but there are developments in technology that we can integrate into ourselves to make things easier. I'm thinking of some rudimentary things like pacemakers. I'm thinking of things like the fact that my father had to have a valve replacement. They had to take a valve from his leg to help a failing valve in his heart. Used to be, they had to literally cut all the way down the leg and explore visibly for a valve. Now, and I don't know how it all works, but now they have a device that will x-ray and look through and see the strength of the valves, and then they make an incision that is significantly smaller just in the place they need to be able to, you know, but they can do all that before they've cut in. And so it's a real tension that I have in my heart as I observe my son entering in as a digital native into the world ahead of him, and the things that I would look at that I would be like, my God, I wish you weren't like this. And I'm saying that honestly, like, I wish that this was not such a distraction. I wish that this was not such a craving. I wish that this was not such the draw. And then at the same time, feeling a bit torn with, like, well, but some of these things, some aspect of them, as they continue to progress, are really going to help in a lot of ways. This is what's wild about that whole conversation. I forget which one of us referenced it earlier. The ways that Megan could do the mundane, repetitive, benign things that is not, in air quotes, that's not parenting, right? Reminding your kid to wash their hands and flush the toilet is not parenting, right? Mm-hmm. So now you can focus on the more important thing. And I'm like, there's this weird battle between comfort and convenience. And at the same time, while I would agree wholeheartedly that a critical element of humanity is shared suffering or compassion, which that's what that means, like, you know, suffering together, compassion, you know, we integrate that with the word humanity. When we say we want somebody to be more humane, we mean that we want them to understand different perspectives from themselves. We want them to, you know, see themselves as part of something bigger than what they already are. And it's just fascinating to me how, you know, one of my favorite shows, one of my very favorite shows since I was a kid is Star Trek. And well, yeah, of course, because I'm like, but what's amazing about Star Trek as a universe is that it presumes a rapid growth of technological development, but also presumes, God, please God, presumes that humanity will also rapidly get to its place where it needs to be, where benevolence is the ultimate virtue, where competition over money is no longer a thing. Like, one of the beauties about the Star Trek universe is that even though there's lots of conflicts, there's an aspirational goal towards possibilities that we will progress as within our humanity at the same time as our technology progresses. And here's what's really fascinating to observe about the way our technology is: it stunts our growth as human beings. what we see happening is that the things which are not, I believe, which are not necessarily in and of themselves bad developments, but because of power players, because of poison pills, that aspects of the technology that have been included in, I'm looking at you, like algorithmic learning that then funnels and teaches you things you shouldn't be learning. It stunts our growth as people. And so where I find this tension, which is, you know, maybe something we would all agree with, but where I find this tension is I'm like, I'm not afraid of technological developments writ large. I'm afraid of what will happen if our technology vastly outpaces our strive to grow as people.
Well, and if I can
go ahead,
if I can jump in there, like I think an important point there is what is the incentive, right? And when the technological growth's incentive is purely capitalistic gain, it will stomp on, squash, subsume humanity on its path to achieve that. And Reed, you make a great point. And, you know, so it's clear, I am no Luddite. I don't mind technology. I think technology is here to stay. It's present. It's growing. It's there are things about it that accomplish great good in the world. I think where the AirPods and their usage and things like them become problematic is what, this is a highfalutin way to put it, but is what steals your soul, what steals your spirit, what steals your attentiveness to life around you, and what enriches life, right? There's an interesting scripting note late in the film when Gemma's trying to reason with Katie, and she says of Megan, she's not a solution, she's a distraction. Read the pacemaker analogy. That thing is not a distraction. That's a sort of product, sure, developed for the purpose of continuing a life.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because I was thinking about what I'm actually not picking on you whatsoever, but I knew the Star Trek comp was going to come, and I was thinking that through, and it would be like, and if I had to wager a guess, there's probably an episode where this happens. It would be like someone in the holodeck, a character in the holodeck develops a relationship. I'm sorry, a real character on the Enterprise, for instance, develops a relationship with an entity, a representative inside the holodeck, and suddenly cannot extract themselves from that. Someone,
yes, that has been more explored.
Yes, I figured. Someone, I would just like some points here for. but whereas someone in their life, in their world, who loves them and whom they love, would be able to see that and say, this isn't a solution to your problem you're experiencing, which is a need for intimacy, a need for catharsis, a need to process natural human emotion being directed at a thing that cannot receive it because it isn't meant to, designed for, or capable of receiving it, you know? And I think that's what's going to become the fascinating guiding question over the coming era is the representation of process actually processing? Is the representation of humanity actually serving us as humans? And I think that's a wild question, but I think it's a legitimate one.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's sort of the point the movie is trying to drive home. It's not trying to create this techno fear narrative.
Sure.
What it's really getting at is about being present in your own life.
Yep.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I like technology too. It's the only reason I'm friends with any of y'all.
Sure. Yeah.
We all met through technology. We are speaking right now through technology.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, this little black mirror in our hands can do a lot to help us connect with each other on a real human level. It can also do a lot to hinder us and distract us.
Yeah.
And when we can finally reach a point where our hearts and our minds are more devoted to the real human connection, and this is just one tool of doing it, that's when we become better people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to your point, this is so putting the film critic hat on more specifically, if you're analyzing this film is Gemma's story. You know, Gemma is Gemma is the one who changes, who grows through this. And she has to grow from being vastly ill-equipped to be a parent, be a guardian, be somebody who understands how to relate to Katie, to the point that, and this is what maybe my final word on the subject for my thematic. I think this is an endlessly fascinating subject. And I think Megan, as a film, is smart enough to poke at some of these things and also smart enough to not try to say too much about them. That's sure, what right, I, yeah. I think it's agreed. It's smart enough to realize we're not making a movie that needs to be very profound. But at the same time, there's clearly enough thoughtfulness in there to say like, but we'll point to that while we're parading through the slash fest. And we'll point to that over there. But Gemma as a character, and I think some of what I'm heartened by the way we've discussed this is the way that science and technology can push us into being our better selves. To a degree, the experience of realizing how bad Megan was for Gemma's relationship to Katie opened Gemma's eyes to it. Mm-hmm. But I think, Jackson, you just said, like, the movie is not spreading techno fear, because what takes Megan out? The old Bruce prototype, the one mm-hmm. that was not absent.
Katie.
And Katie. But Bruce is the one that Katie takes on. And what's the difference between Bruce and Megan? Megan is completely self-sufficient. You turn her right. on, she does all the work. Bruce mm-hmm. requires a relationship. I'm using flowery language, but Bruce sure. requires
no, it's absolutely
human
true,
engagement.
Yeah.
And I think that's not insignificant that we're sure it's temporary. Megan 2.0 is already greenlit, but yeah. But the in this film, the fact that I just found that very smart, that it's like technology's not bad, but technology requires a version of relationship and engagement that when we get so advanced with our technology that we decouple ourselves from it, we decouple ourselves yeah. from relationship, we decouple ourselves from embracing the imperfections, the awkwardness, all the things that we've discussed when exploring the question of what makes us human. And when we segment that and we bifurcate that, then our technology moves so far ahead of us that we have no entry point. But, you know, maybe we can have a relationship with technology that still involves us and still involves our participation that might win the day, so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, like I said,
the Bruce thing was something I really latched onto the last few times I watched the movie as well, because what's the first thing that Gemma and Katie actually bond over?
Bruce. Yeah.
It's Bruce. And she, like, you know, she puts on the little gloves and she waves it, or Bruce, quote unquote, waves at Katie and gives her a high five, but it's not Bruce doing it. It's Gemma doing it.
That's right. That's exactly right. I think that's intentional. I think that's very intentional on the part of the film and its story.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So here's, you know, we've gotten into some profundity. Here's a mind blower for you. Reed, you just referenced Megan 2.0 has been greenlit. Is that mm-hmm. the legitimate name of the movie, or what's been proposed as?
That's what
it may
been...
change, but that's what it's been pitched
well,
as.
Well, I guess then the question is, like, Scream before it, like Halloween before it, will the third Megan film just be called M3gan? You know, like, and why not? If not, all right,
yeah, they
boys,
kind of shot themselves in the foot there.
I know. Yeah. Someone should have vetted that first. You know, guys, we've been having these real high-minded conversation. Like, does it get more high-minded than what makes us human? Right. You know, we've
gone
to the
cosmic
depths.
For a little
we
bit.
We went galaxy brain on Megan, but lest we forget, gents, we're a horror show. So if it's gory, if it's gross, if it causes you a fright, it is time for the part of the show that we call That Ain't Right.
That ain't right, it ain't right, nothing right about it. No, that ain't right, no, that ain't right, no, that ain't right, it ain't right. It sure is telling it right, it sure is telling it right.
That ain't right, that ain't right, that sure as hell ain't right.
Okay. Here we are. Gentlemen, pull up your lists. Drew, I'm going to start with you, friend. Why don't you name, we're just doing one here. Why don't you name your top That Ain't Right from the film Megan?
Okay. Don't get mad at me because I
No
think
one's
some
going to get mad at
of
you
is
here.
on this list, but it has to be when Megan rips Brandon's ear off because that was shocking. I would not expect to see that in a PG-13 movie.
Now,
It
okay,
is so
you raise a
legit.
good question here. I was talking to Penny about having watched the unrated one, and I watched the standard one at release. So I really don't remember what the differences at this point would be. Was the ear present in the theatrical?
Yes.
It happens, but it doesn't show the gore.
Okay,
Yeah, there's a
yeah.
few
Sorry.
more extra shots in
Yeah.
there. Yeah, it's a classic,
Yeah.
like those few gore shots, like what really sends you over the edge, which is stupid, in my
That's,
opinion.
but that's really the only difference. I mean, to your question, Nathan, that's really the only difference between the unrated and the theatrical version is more harder edged language. I think
Yeah.
there's only the one obligatory F-bomb in the theatrical release, but there's a plethora in the unrated version. And all of the violent scenes are extended slightly, you know, by maybe 5 to 10 seconds. That's the
Okay.
unrated element. Yeah.
All right, Jackson, what about you, sir? We've got the
Oh, goodness.
Brandon the bully's ear getting ripped off.
I have like seven written down. I don't know what to
Yeah,
say. I don't know what to pick. You know what I'm gonna pick? I'm gonna pick the silly one because that's always fun. The very opening of the movie, the Perpetual Pets commercial. What a weird, creepy way to advertise a toy. I had a dog, she was my only friend,
oh
but
my
then
God.
she died and I'm alone again. And then
Oh
it's
man.
talking about you can finally have a pet that lives longer than you.
So funny. God, that
That's
was so
how you
funny.
remember
It's
about
so
this thing. This is
such a
so funny.
wrong, terrible way to market a toy to children.
It's like, hey kid, you know that dog you love? It's gonna die one day.
Oh my God, right?
So here's a little furry robot that won't do that. And
Man. I called
it
that thing the
poops.
fart the farting Furby is what I called that.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And the thing's obnoxious. You know, you see it in the very next scene, and it's just the most awful, annoying toy. And you have
Super.
to play with it on your iPad.
Yeah, super obnoxious.
It's so stupid, but it
Reed, what
ain't
about you?
right.
What about you?
Yeah, I jotted a couple of things down. I think if I was to cite one, like it's tough because it's like I'm gonna mention it in That Ain't Right, but it's also arguably one of the coolest sequences in the movie is the I'll just call it the elevator deaths when
Sure. Yeah.
David and Kurt get taken out. You know, it immediately follows the trailer moment that we've referenced before of her busting into the dance and then ripping off the paper cutter blade and then going right after David. But it's great. Then, and I should have written it down, but when she kills David, he's done. Kurt is blood splattered, and then she's like, "Oh, you know, you did it. You know, could you live with your, you know, she says, you did it. You killed him because you were trying to backstab him." Or, you know, I didn't write down her
Sure.
whole speech. And then, but I remember what she ends with is she says, "But then after all that, could you live with yourself?" And as she's bringing the knife to his throat, he's like, yes, I could. It's so funny. But then, of course, final beat on that one is that, you know, they're getting down to the launch and they've got everybody there. They're like, put away your phones. We're here to introduce technology to you, which, you know, and then they're like, we want real reactions. Okay. So we're not showing you this before. And then the elevator doors open with the blood splatter and everyone's like,
It's
oh my God,
a
it was
bunch
so
of
great.
kids in there. Yeah.
Yes. So just the whole elevator sequence. Like I said, I'm torn including in it That Ain't Right because it's also arguably one of the best scenes in the movie, but it's still so much of it ain't right.
I think for me, I would, I'm not going to cite this because it's just accentuating what Drew already threw out there, but Brandon getting Gage creeded was a real That Ain't Right. But I mean, nobody mentioned it, but the pressure washing the neighbor's face off is just wretched. That is
Yes.
so nasty. And yeah, I mean, that's not cool.
That
but
woman kind of had it coming. She was a terrible dog owner.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
she's a
I
bad
don't.
neighbor, bad dog owner, bad just
Dude,
all around. Obnoxious.
the way that he was calling her dog was annoying too. She was like, Dewey boy. Like, stop that. Back up,
All right.
lady. God,
Yes.
I'm
And she
like
makes her dog
dog.
sleep outside.
Yeah.
Meanie.
Oh. Yeah, I forgot one of those two. Okay. All right. What? See, my notes are kind of jumbled up because I promise this is not going to become a weekly thing, but it feels like this movie begs for an action figure line. And, it's Bo is afraid. Talk to me. It is time once more, for a pitch meeting on the
God
action figure line. Rita, can't tell if you're energized or actually repulsed.
I never know until I see it. I just show up for these and go okay.
These aren't. Come on. You cannot top Bo is Afraid. Build a figure. Build a phallus. There. This is not. This is not going to be that. But you got to have multiple iterations of Megan, right? So there's going to be standard Megan, and she comes with a pressure washer accessory. Okay. There is loping Megan is what I called her, which is the racing on all fours Megan. Fascinatingly was at least a reference to how hard it has been in robotics to create a robot that can run on two legs. So that's what that's meant to sort of illustrate there. So you got loping Megan, and she comes with a Brandon's ear accessory. Okay. then you've got who I called Ninja Megan, right? She comes with the paper shredder, but her real, she naturally comes with the paper shredder blade in her hand, but her true accessory is a Xerox machine. Just because it's right there. And when you're, kind of playing with your action figures, someone needs a Xerox machine for the New Year's Eve party or something like that.
Well, she would also have to have the twisty motion. So she
She twist at the hips. Do that kind of thing. this one would be, then there'd be waterlogged Megan, right? I jokingly refer to her as possessed by a demon Megan. There's one more Megan in the line, and that is battle damage Megan. Her face is trimmed in two. Half of her hair is torn off and her body comes apart and the mask can come off. Her accessory that she comes with is a perpetual pet farting Furby, right? So that's what she comes with, the little one that, you press its tummy and it makes an actual fart noise. The last two, of course, we've got Gemma. She's going to come with a rolling ball collectible toy accessory. You just put it on the ground and roll it between your action figures. It doesn't do anything else. Now, Katie is going to tip us off here with an accessory she comes with. So she comes with an ElsieBot accessory, and she comes with an extra pair of hands, because on this extra pair of hands is going to signal the Build-A-Figure that comes with the Megan action figures, which is, boys, you get to build your own Bruce. And figure is going to come with an extra pair of hands that have the Bruce gloves on, so you can, animate Bruce as you go. So there you go. That is your Megan action figure line. I expect Blumhouse to be calling super shortly, much like the former CEO of my company texted me. I'm sure I'll get a text any day now from Jason Blum, and I will be like, hey, sure, I'll go buy Amazon gift cards for my friends and send them to you.
Oh my gosh.
Did you dance? Did you twist? Did you squint your eyes real tight? It was probably because of what we around here call That Ain't Right.
That sure as hell ain't right.
Oh, it's great. Well, gents, this has been a really, really fun conversation, but it is time once again for us to rate this film in our specific show metric, which is the fog meter, where we rate all of the media that we cover on our very specific metric of fear and God. Fear meaning how scary, gnarly, disturbing, gross it is, and God representing the substance of it. Basically, what does it have on its mind and how well does it express what it has on its mind? This does not measure the quality of the films per se, but rather their gravity, how much they demand of you as a viewer. So, Jackson, I'm going to start with you. What would you give Megan on the fog meter? You can go ahead and give me both numbers, your fear and God.
I've been dreading this. Okay. it's not really that scary. It's really not. There's a reason that this movie is marketed towards younger viewers.
Yeah.
It's good. I think Nathan on his Letterboxd review called this good entry level horror. And I agree. However, there are enough moments. I think the way that Megan is framed, like especially in scenes like the scene where she's watching the window and there's the little butterfly landing on the window. And you're just like, it's this eerie image of what is going on in this robot's head. And then like when she gets down on all fours in the woods, that sort of thing, even when she's carrying the paper cutter down the hallway after the dance, but when she's just walking with purpose after David down the hallway, there's enough of that stuff that I think I can give it a 6 on the fear.
All right. Now, and what would you give it for the God meter?
God, I would have to go considerably higher. I think, you know, it scratches at a lot of stuff and we've talked about it all pretty much. But I think that's deeply ingrained in the film. I don't think this is one of those situations where we're just extrapolating too much. Right. So I'm going to give it a 9.
Okay. All right, Drew, you're up. What would you give Megan for, give me both numbers, your fear and your God meter?
I'm going to go fear. I'm going to go at 8. It's not obviously the scariest movie I've ever seen, not even close, but just some of the ideas that it presents and that we discussed on here. It absolutely terrifies me. Like, AI scares the absolute crap out of me.
Sure.
And Megan's scary too. Like, I find Megan way scarier than Chucky.
Because
when Megan's friendly, like, she's still scary.
Yeah.
Like, Chucky by himself, when he's not Charles Lee Ray, is not scary.
That's
like,
a good point. Yeah.
I'm going to go God. I'm going to go a 9 just because we had some real insightful conversations about this. And the movie's way smarter than it any business being.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. No, that's very, very cool. Nathan, what's your numbers for this? Fear and God.
I think for fear, I'm gonna go with a. I'm kind of torn here. I'm toggling between a couple in my head, and I'll just split the middle. And I'm gonna go to 5.5 on the fear measure. I'll do both here. I'll go with a 5 on the God. Now, here's why. Those may sound super tepid compared to you, my peers here. I think that, you know, if Nero fiddled while Rome burned, Megan danced while Blumhouse said, "See?" Right? So the idea that they're not really forcing anything. They're just channeling what already is and just saying, "Hey, isn't the end of the world fun?" You know, and so I don't know that they are themselves attempting to speak profoundly as much as they're just using the component parts that are very evident in the kind of world we're in right now. So what may sound like a slight is really just, you know, yes, it is Megan, and Megan is here.
Wow. I hear you. This is a difficult one for me. I think I'm agreeing with what we're all saying about its fear. I don't think it's a very scary movie. I don't think it's something that's going to induce a lot of nightmares. I think, gateway horror is a great way to describe it. I think 6 feels right for me on the fear measurement. For the God, the reason I'm so torn, I'm going to go 7.5. And the reason I'm so torn on if that's the right number or not is because I do feel like it deliberately holds itself back from exploring other things. And I think that is smart on the film's part, because it would be no fun if it was this overwrought, heavy-laden exploration of technological development. So I think at the same time, it can feel as if when a film doesn't go for the throat on those subjects, as if it's not smart. And this film, I think, undeniably is very, very smart. It's smart about the ways it deploys subtler digs at our relationship with technology. The jokes are pretty smart and savvy in it. I think, like I said, its tone strikes a really perfect balance. So that's why I think it like perfectly, purposely holds itself back. And that's why I think 7.5 for me. So that means that we give Megan a solid, no decimals, 7 out of 10 on the fog meter.
Nice.
So yeah, that is our rating, which honestly for Megan feels right. So after having this conversation, where are we at on this movie? Nathan, I'm going to start with you, actually, perhaps surprisingly. Where are you at on this movie after this conversation?
I dig it. In fact, I went into it the second time for this conversation a little unsure. I was like, well, yeah, it's Megan. Yeah, it's fun. Let's dance. and in fact, by the end of it, found myself a bit more under its spell than I remembered even the first time. Partly, I kind of forgot much of the showdown in the shed, you know, at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was like, oh, well, this is cool. Don't know that I remembered all of this. I think I saw the end the first time, but who knows? Could be lost to 40 something fatigue. But no, I think it's eminently watchable. Yeah. You know, I think that it's going to have a very long shelf life. Kind of something you said earlier, I would heartily agree with Reed. I'm curious to see what's next and how they push the ball forward, you know, in ways that don't feel just totally redundant, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. Drew, after this conversation, where are you at with Megan? How you feel about it?
I love this movie. First time watching it, I love it even more.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. That's great. I'll share my feelings, and Jackson, I'll let you bring us home. This elevated for me, this viewing. I enjoyed it first time out, and I appreciated more this time around. And even though my comments at the beginning of the conversation perhaps could have been interpreted as a bit either backhanded compliments or perhaps even tepid feelings, I do feel that this film earns its place in the conversation. I'm excited to see where the franchise goes. And I really think this is a fun movie. I have no qualms whatsoever recommending it to pretty much anybody. I think it's a really, really fun film that if you want to engage it more thoughtfully, it gives you the opportunity to do that. Jackson, after this conversation, where are you at with it?
I still absolutely adore this movie. You know, we talked about the great design of Megan, but just the idea that just last year we got to witness the birth of a truly great horror villain.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Which
we don't get very often.
Not just the design, but it's like the way that she's written, the animatronics and the practical effects used to bring her to life, the physical performance by Amy Donald, the vocal performance by Jenna Davis, all the way she's framed, even all just working together to create this truly unforgettable character.
Yeah. Oh, so, I think that's very, very well
said.
That's
such a laudable thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. Again, very, very well said. So, yeah, gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming on the show and helping us talk about this this really bananas movie that that I think is this year, last year, I mean, in horror was so fascinating. Like I've said more than once in this series of podcasts, the fact that Megan is sitting on the same shelf as Skinamarink and Beau is Afraid and Talk to Me and Evil Dead Rise. It's just It was a wild year for horror, and a lot of really strong entries, I think. Very interesting entries that I think lays some groundwork for some interesting things to come in the future. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we hope that you enjoyed this. Thank you so, so much again, Drew of Horror, Sci-Fi, and Beyond, and Friend of the Fog. Jackson of Family with Family, and also a Friend of the Fog for many years. Nathan, thank you as always. And listeners, thank you as well. As we say on every episode, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, but not the end of the conversation. And in that spirit, we encourage you to fear nothing else and be on your way rejoicing. Next week, we are circling up out of the patron segments that we've been marching through with the fall of the House of Usher, and we are having our big Usher conversation, the entire conversation about the Netflix series, The Fall of the House of Usher. If you've been following us in the patron segment, hopefully you're caught up and ready for that. There's no homework. If you haven't been watching the series along with us, then that's your homework. Watch the series. Come and check out our conversation about that next week. So next week, the conversation is about the Fall of the House of Usher series. And again, thank you all, listeners. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll see you all next week.
See ya.
The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, but not the end of the conversation. And you can continue the conversation in a variety of ways. Start by visiting thefearofgodpodcast.com for links to our social media, essays, and episode archive merchandise and more. If you love what we do, please consider becoming a patron by visiting patreon.com/thefearofgodpodcast. There, you'll unlock exclusive bonus episodes, extended standard episodes, online event access, and so much more. We want to issue a special thanks to Jacob Hunt of TracerMatula.com for our artwork, also to our assortment of talented musicians, including Andrew Nelson, The Island Family, and Jackson Harper for our varied show tunes, and also to Lee Wright, who helped me, Reed Lackey, write our theme music. Special thanks also to Tyler Smith at MoreThanOneLesson.com. Lastly, be sure to subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice, and if you listen to us through Apple Podcasts, we would greatly appreciate a rating and a review. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Hi, everybody.